You're listening to We Are STS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Hi, everybody, and welcome to We Are STS. I'm your host, Professor Joe Kane. This is another bonus episode. Today, we have the third of our series from the STS Newsroom. Remember, that was a summer trainee program in science journalism. Students in the STS Newsroom worked for 8 weeks on all sorts of journalism projects, including writing for our magazine, STS Alchemy, and producing some podcasts. On the podcasts, we gave our trainees a couple of specific tasks. Come up with a story, do the research, interview some experts, and bring the results together in a way that makes for good listening. Today, it's the turn of one of our master's students, Chelsea Tripp. Chelsea completed her degree in 2021, and she's since gone off into science journalism and science communication. For her project, Chelsea researched representation of scientists in the media, focusing specifically on streaming services such as Netflix and Disney+. After so much discussion about Black Lives Matter, gender equity, disability rights campaigns, and more, how have these supposedly innovative services improved on representation? Just who gets to be a scientist these days? Chelsea's episode is self-contained, which means I get to sit back and listen to it again with you. And that also means I'll see you on the other side.
I'm Chelsea Tripp, a postgraduate student here at STS, and this is a part of the We Are STS podcast series. Today, I'm exploring the idea of representation of scientists on TV and potential solutions to this problem. Now, during lockdown, we probably all watched far too much TV, binging on our favourite TV series and films while stuck at home. But after the Black Lives Matter protests in the summer just gone, and now in Pride Month, it's become more noticeable that every time I choose to watch something that depicts a scientist, the portrayal of a straight, cis, white man tends to dominate the majority of our favourite and most popular streaming services. Netflix and Disney Plus, I'm looking at you. So now, more than ever, there seems to be an increasing pressure and awareness for companies like Netflix and Disney Plus to improve the diversity of both their casts and crew. So it's getting better, right? Sort of. There is progress, but this is perhaps happening slower than we would like. So before we get into the nitty-gritty of representation on Netflix and Disney Plus, we need to ask ourselves, why is representation important? Why do we even need representation of scientists that differ from the white, straight, male, cis stereotype? I asked Stephen Hughes, a lecturer within the STS department here at UCL, whose research focuses on public engagement with science and responsible innovation, or more simply, the image of scientists as figures of responsibility.
So there's a number of different reasons why that's important. I mean, first of all, we don't want to discriminate against women. We don't want to discriminate against people of color. We don't want to discriminate against people of different classes or income backgrounds. We don't want to discriminate against people who are disabled or neurodiverse. And a very, 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 you know, basic but effective way of doing that is to encourage people who deviate in any way from what is, you know, this kind of stereotypical norm of what a scientist is, encourage these people to feel that they belong as scientists by saying, look, there are people like you who already are doing this work. And, you know, even in any of the work that I've done with public engagement around STEM or people who are doing science communication, that's one of, particularly women and women of color, one of their biggest motivations is basically saying, I want people to say, you know, there's someone who looks like me, who's a scientist, so I can feel that I can do that as well. So just the very basic representation, you know, which is, it's not the be all and end all, but it's something that's quite important to say, like, yes, I can do this and I belong and I deserve to do this because I can see other people have come before me to do that. So that's one. Another, and this comes from research that I was doing recently on women science communicators, is that there are other ways of doing science than the way that we do it at the moment. And the way that we do it at the moment is very much led by the kind of pale, male and stale kind of, you know, professors with big reputations who decide what topics are worth studying, what types of research we should invest in, and what problems, you know, are worth solving. And when you get a kind of not diverse group of people making, you know, huge decisions about where masses of resources should go, you tend to get pretty discriminatory allocation of what those resources should be spent on. And if you have diversity and representation of lots of different communities, both in the kind of engagement stage, but also working in science, you're more likely to get research funding and research which is allocated in a much better way. And this is like, this is actually better for innovation. And there's a whole kind of area of responsible innovation called gendered innovation. And it's basically just trying to address the issues of, you know, sex and gender bias in science, which have only really been properly or systematically addressed in the last 10 years. And these are all of those issues that we've heard, like, you know, how heart disease is typically understood as a male disease. And so, like, terrifyingly large numbers of women are dying because they're not receiving the appropriate healthcare, they're not receiving the appropriate medication, the appropriate clinical diagnosis or treatment, because the research has not been done at, you know, many different levels of the pharmacological level, even in, you know, like basic science research where they're using male animal models because female animal models are too unreliable, again, because they menstruate or because they're, you know, the hormones shift and it's just much easier to have a more stable male model. And gendered innovation basically says, well, you know, if you ask questions about, you know, your research topic or frame your research topic by taking into context issues of sex and gender, you actually have more questions to ask. You've got more things to research. You've got more social impact. You've got, you know, more medications. You've got more treatments. You, like, you know, innovation is actually increased. So it's not like doing these things hampers research or closes it down or makes it, you know, less interesting. There are more interesting questions to ask. And it's a very basic thing. You know, if you have more women who are working in these fields, you can get those perspectives that you need, that diversity of perspectives, which can help direct research, help, you know, craft better research problems and research questions.
So to sum up, we need representation because, one, it offers role models for young people to look up to, not just as a form of inspiration, but also to help with self-confidence. Secondly, this normalises and offers more diverse people the chance to play a character that is typically seen as white, straight, and male. So we break down barriers that people may have towards certain jobs, in this case, scientists, and who should actually be in them. And finally, with more representation comes more voices, more ideas, and more creative perspectives, which ultimately leads to more research. So we've spoken about why representation is important, but how exactly are scientists represented on Netflix and Disney Plus? I wanted to find out more, and as a mini experiment, I was interested to see what the first 9 results were when I typed in science onto both of these streaming platforms. And from the 18 results examined, most of the TV series depicted scientists as white men. So if we take a closer look at the types of people that were actually in the role of scientist, Disney Plus was only slightly more representative than Netflix, with 5 out of 9 TV shows depicting black women and men and people of colour. So on Disney Plus, we had number 1, which was the National Geographic Science Fair. And I have to say, this I found quite surprising, and this is perhaps the TV show with the most diverse outlook in terms of who is doing the science. So this TV show is about different teenagers from around the world competing to win a global science fair. So we have a variety of young women and men of colour, black women and men from different countries, which I thought was really cool because it's rare that we actually get to see on screen science from different countries, especially from younger people as well. So we had number 2, which was Star Wars The Bad Batch. And I have to say, I found this disappointing. We've got Nala Say, a female scientist, but as a cartoon, the woman voicing Nala Say wasn't actually present on screen. So I felt this was kind of bittersweet since we could hear her, but we couldn't actually see her. We've got number 3, which was Star Wars The Mandalorian, and we had an Iranian and American man as scientist, Dr. Pershing. And we had number 4, which Star Wars The Clone Wars, again, similar to number 2, this one is also a cartoon, and we had 2 female scientists, Nala Say and Jenna Arbor, but again, I found it disappointing because we weren't actually seeing these women on screen. They were hidden behind a cartoon, essentially. And finally, we've got number 5, which is WandaVision. And as much as I love WandaVision, the cast is quite white. We've only got 1 white woman with a PhD in astrophysics, and that's Darcy Lewis. So in my opinion, I think number 1, the National Geographic Science Fair, I think from Disney Plus, this is the most diverse and probably the most interesting of who is actually doing the science on screen. Now, Netflix, on the other hand, only had 4 out of the 9 TV shows depicting someone who wasn't a white man in the role of scientist. However, I have to say that these were predominantly white men or women in these roles. And only 1 of the TV shows on Netflix actually depicted somebody who was a woman of colour at the front and centre of the scientific experiment. On Netflix, we had number 1, The Universe. And yeah, straight away, I found this disappointing. I only watched the first episode, but straight away I noticed an abundance of white men. The gender ratio was 4 men to 2 women in just that one episode. So we had Deborah Fisher, who's a professor of astronomy, and we also had Beth Biller, who is also an astronomy researcher. And annoyingly, a similar story followed in number 2, Connected. We also had 2 white women. We had Dr. Emma Baxter, who is an animal behaviour and welfare researcher. And we had Sarah Greeley, who is also a white female conservationist coordinator. And although we've connected, we had more of an even gender ratio because we had 2 men to 2 women, there was still predominantly white people. But this is a story that follows on into number 3, which is 2036 Origin Unknown. And this was a film, so unlike the others, which are TV shows, this was a film that depicted a white female scientist called Mac supervising a mission to Mars. And if we move to number 4, which is Emily's Lab. And for me, this was the most refreshing because we had a female person of colour who is a teenager as the narrator and main protagonist interested in doing scientific experiments. And I think with Netflix, unlike Disney Plus, there was a definite lack of diversity in terms of race, which, yeah, I definitely found disappointing. What I also found concerning was that from all of the 18 shows, no neurodiverse individuals, no LGBTQ plus individuals or know individuals that seem to come from a different socioeconomic background were presented on screen within the role of scientist. So why are Disney Plus and Netflix not choosing to be more representative when it comes to science shows? I speak to Jean-Baptiste Guyon to find out more, as he has 15 years experience in researching the medium of television and science communication on screen.
I need to make a confession, which is that I don't own a television set. I mean, what I know is based on what I read, and television and film in general is a very complex medium. I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but it mixes sound and images. So it's a multisensorial experience to watch those. And I suppose, I'm not a psychologist, I'm not a cognitive scientist, so I suppose that this mix of images and sound maybe has a kind of profound impact on people's brains and perceptions of the world. That being said, I don't think that it's useful to consider any medium in isolation, because each medium exists in a mediascape, to use one of Roger Silverstone's term. You can't really understand television content if you don't pay attention to, for instance, the books which are published to accompany the release of new programs. Periodicals like Radio Times in the UK, which also provide people with frames on how to see and perceive and understand television programs. David Attenborough, for instance, is a good example, because he's present on television, he's present in newspapers, in magazines, he's writing books, he's giving public lectures. All this contributes in creating a kind of popular culture, if you want. And television is only a part of it, I'd say. There is still, I think, a dominance of white male being presented as scientists, but there is a kind of realization that it's not enough and it's not possible to keep doing this. And so people who produce television programs are actively choosing to represent other types of person as scientists. So I think the necessity of justice, of diversifying representation, is something which has dawned on executives and program makers, etc. So now there is a real drive to do this. Anna Fry is also a mathematician from UCL. He's quite in the spotlight. So you can see that there has been a lot of people coming up and coming to prominence who are not male, whom are white, that's certain. When you look at the history of the BBC, it is something which, it is an institution which is very much associated and tied with the establishment. Okay, so it's a very upper class kind of endeavor. Until recently, and I think it still is the case, most people working at the BBC in high level positions were all Oxbridge educated people. So you can see it is a very elite kind of institution. And I mean, elites are very good at reproducing themselves, making sure that they stay the same and that they endure through time. Elites in the UK, as elsewhere in Europe, are mostly white. There are countless examples of non-white people trying to come into the elite, who are either welcome, but they are constantly reminded that they are not exactly what they should be. And I think that is why in the BBC there are still a majority of white people. It's that because it is an elitist institution, which is, and it is built on the premise that in society you need an elite to guide the people, and that the elite will know what is good for the people, that they will know what kind of content they should produce for them to consume, that they will know how to educate them to make them good citizens. And so it is almost inevitable that they will be white people. Maybe if we can see now that progressively non-white people are accessing to the elite and to the establishment, then we can see some kind of change percolating into places like the BBC. But I don't think the BBC will impulse that kind of change. It is a much deeper movement which has to take place in much deeper strata of society and culture, I think. And the BBC is just, it's a mirror which society is holding to itself, basically.
So we've been talking about the effect on television, on its audiences, and the reasons why TV corporations such as the BBC may prefer to keep white people on screen. After the break, we'll talk about the impact a lack of representation may have on people in the workplace. You have been listening to the We Are STS podcast. We'll be back, but let's take a short break.
Are you thinking about UCL for your master's degree? The Department of Science and Technology Studies offers three MSc degrees, one in Science, Technology and Society, another in History and Philosophy of Science. And we have a new MSc in Science Communication available starting 2022. These programs are designed for specialist training, preparation for PhD programs, and practical career development. To find out more, visit us online at ucl.ac.uk/STS.
Let's get back to Chelsea Tripp's report on representation of scientists in streaming platforms like Netflix and Disney+. Is it still pale, male, and stale?
So we understood from Jean-Baptiste that large broadcasters like the BBC are comparable to both Disney+ and Netflix in the sense that what they produce on screen directly correlates to the type of people that work in these companies, particularly in the top positions. But we also know it's to do with who these companies perceive as the actual audience. Again, representation is a much wider problem in which we know TV does play a role, but what does it actually feel like to experience a lack of representation in the workplace? I asked Gemma Milne about her own experiences as a science journalist.
I think because I'm freelance, I probably have a slightly different viewpoint than those who are staff writers. And that's because when you're freelance, you kind of build your own community and find your own colleagues. And so a lot of the people that I've gone to for advice or I've ended up getting to know actually tend to be women. And it's probably just because we, you know, as women tend to do, bump together and help each other, want to help each other. And maybe it feels a little bit more natural to approach somebody of your own gender, your own perceived social class, race, all that sort of a thing. What I do notice, though, is that most of the people that are in my peer group tend to be pretty, you know, come from relatively affluent backgrounds, tend to be white, don't necessarily tend to be male for the reason that I just explained. But there's definitely a lot of privilege in terms of how you're able to afford to do the job. So for me personally, like, I do a lot of work that isn't writing in order to afford to write, because writing is not well paid, it's not well supported, and it's actually very hard to get into. And so it's more that I see the privilege of those that are able to actually do it simply because they can afford to live.
Do you think that representation of women and perhaps inequalities to do with being a woman were more noticeable in your older job in comparison to the job that you do now as a science journalist?
I think in some ways I haven't really noticed a lot of the sort of the sexism that I probably have experienced many times. And I think that comes from growing up in a quite, you know, I played football at high school, I studied maths and physics, and then I went into investment banking, which is all very male dominated. And so I've kind of been used to being the sole female or the very few, one of the very few women. And so maybe comments or things I sort of don't notice because I've heard them so often, perhaps. So I don't really have examples to kind of pull on. However, I think what I have noticed is there seems to be a different kind of level of confidence when people come to me asking for advice on how to do what I do. So I almost never get men coming to me and saying, How do you like feel confident enough to go up on stage? And how did you feel that you were good enough to do a podcast? Or how, why did you feel that you had the right to do it, right? The audacity. And so I think that there's a difference, and I guess in the sense of how we're conditioned to feel about our own worth, which we know a lot about, particularly from a gender perspective, but also from a race perspective and socioeconomic. Writing a book is a perfect example. You hardly ever see young women writing nonfiction because it's like, well, how come they have the right? They don't have the experience. They haven't worked in that field for long enough. They are not professors and so on and so forth. Whereas you will see a lot of younger men writing nonfiction, particularly in the sciences, because, well, they're clever enough and they have the knowledge and so on and so forth. So I worked in London for 8 years. I've just recently moved back to Scotland. And for all that time I was in London, I was sort of seen as this like bullshy, confident person because I was Scottish, right? Oh, Scottish people are like that. And I'm like, no, that is actually just what I'm like. It meant, I think, that I kind of quote unquote got away with being a sort of strong, confident woman. Whereas I would see friends of mine who had English accents or Welsh accents or Northern accents not getting the same sort of kudos, I guess, you know? And I remember that in my first corporate job, I was always, oh, Scottish Gemma speaking her mind. And it's like, well, it's you know, I think that's almost like you're trying to apologize for the fact that I'm female by saying, oh, it's because she's Scottish that she's allowed to do this. It's ridiculous that as women, we have to sort of find ways to justify being strong in our opinions or being confident in our abilities or feeling that our voice deserves to be heard. Or that I think that that's something that certainly a lot of conversations I've had with people in media over the years is like around this audacity or entitlement to actually just do the thing in the first place.
So we understand what kind of effect a lack of representation in the workplace can have. It can make us feel uncomfortable to not have someone of the same gender, race, socioeconomic status, neurodivergency, etc. to relate to. But what can actually be done to improve representation of scientists on streaming platforms like Disney Plus and Netflix, but also in the workplace in STEM? Let's see what Stephen, Jean-Baptiste and Gemma think.
I think that the more that we recognise that our technologically and digitally mediated world is really a world of people with all of these kind of competing views, and the more resources we put into trying to manage and understand and work with the diversity of these people, the better we'll get. And most importantly, I think one of the most encouraging approaches is thinking about our relationships with each other through care. You know, this idea of care, and we see this coming up in a lot of, it's really coming into public engagement and science and technology studies, hopeful way that I think that we can start to build towards the kind of use of science and technology in a way that can appreciate the diversity and that can actually make the world a better place. Like, wouldn't it be amazing to see what does science mean in, like, you know, like a really advanced African country like Somalia or something with a real rich cultural, intellectual cultural tradition? Like, wouldn't it be amazing to see what science is like there right now, what kind of impacts it has on communities there and how they imagine, you know, the future for science, for African science, but, you know, for all different places and all different kind of like a diversity of different countries.
Recent TV shows are really making an effort to showcase and put in prominent positions people from very diverse backgrounds, I mean, in terms of ethnicity, gender, identity, etc. I think there is a generation of television producers who are coming into prominence, who are very aware of that kind of stuff. And in what they do, they really try and implement what they think can provoke some change. I've been watching Sex Education on Netflix, I think. It is quite diverse in its outlook and it promotes a lot of diversity. I mean, you've got gay people, you've got black people, you've got, and they all live together happily, etc. So it's much more diverse than what you could consume when I was 15, for instance. Science may not necessarily reflect the diversity of society as much as we would like it to do. It's not something which can happen in overnight. To an extent, we still live by values which have been agreed upon in the 17th century, especially when it comes to science. I suppose it's all about education and hoping that the next generations will do things different. I mean, in my lifetime, I already can see that there has been a lot of changes, much more so than during my parents' lifetime, for instance. But I think it's a question of changing small things and hoping that it will have a kind of butterfly effect.
So part of this diversity conversation that gets forgotten a lot is socioeconomic, right? We don't talk a lot about the fact that it's not just race and gender, it's money, it's how, where people come from, and it's also whether or not your parents have degrees, for instance. That's a huge, huge bearing on whether or not people end up in science. So I think we have to broaden the kind of discussion around diversity to start including things beyond just, are you interviewing a woman? Are you interviewing an Asian or a Black person or whatever? As a journalist, it's like, how do we even talk about the more invisible forms of inequality, which also include race? There's not just one solution to this. There's also general societal changes that are required in order to kind of feed through to get more people in science media or in science. So crucially, though, saying there's not just one solution doesn't then take us off the hook. It doesn't just get us say, oh, well, it's too complicated. There are things that everybody can do. And I think that's the crucial point. It's not about saying it's too complex. It's about saying you can attack this problem and chip away at it from many, many different angles. You can look at, you know, media corporations like Disney or Netflix and say, oh, it's about what they put on TV. So let's change who the actors are or what the stories are. Whatever. But then you look at who it is they're hiring and who it is that's commissioning, and there's no diversity there at all. So then you have to say, well, actually, maybe it's about making sure the people who are doing the commissioning, people who are making decisions, who are making this stuff and so on and so forth, also have various different kinds of diversity embedded. And then you look at, well, who's funding these companies? Is it, you know, are they all from certain countries? Are they all companies that are made up of boards of white men? Well, I think it goes back to companies not just saying, oh, we're a media company, so let's change what's on screen. It's going, what is it that our business does, and what power are we allocating and playing with in the sheer existence of our corporation? And how do we, as a powerful entity in that, make more responsible decisions?
So let me summarise what we have discussed today. I wanted to know how scientists are represented on TV, so I sampled Netflix and Disney by searching science on these platforms and found that there is a lack of diversity, particularly in terms of race, gender, sexuality, neurodivergency, and socioeconomic status. Experts in STS have told me why we need representation, mainly for reasons of equality, and that it can also be frustrating and uncomfortable to be the only person within a workplace, particularly if you're the only woman. We also spoke about why corporations such as BBC, Netflix and Disney Plus may prefer to keep white people on screen in the role of scientist, which is partly due to big companies wanting to maintain power. And unfortunately, power right now currently translates to an image of a predominantly white person. And therefore, this classic white image is replicated on screen on science TV shows as a direct reflection of the people within the company, particularly in the top positions. I think it's important to understand that the problem of representation is multifaceted and does go beyond TV and beyond science shows, and is ultimately part of a wider problem that we have in STEM and in the workplace. However, this image of a scientist as a white, old, straight, cis man is something that is embedded within society, and is an image that streaming platforms like Disney and Netflix have profited off of for a long time now. So this is going to take time to change this, and is going to require a deeper look at how we function as a society. The key thing is to keep talking to different scientific communities, to understand what audiences want from science shows and the characters within them, and also to keep pushing companies to move away from the pale male and stale image of scientists. The more we talk about this issue, the more awareness we bring, and with this comes added pressure. We must make sure we keep pushing companies like Disney and Netflix to better how they represent scientists and other characters, as we are ultimately consumers of the products that they make, and we actually have quite a lot of power, especially if we all band together. So I'd like to say a big thank you to Stephen, Jean-Baptiste and Gemma for taking the time to talk to me, and thank you so much for listening. And I hope to see you on the next podcast.
Well, that's our show for today. Well done, Chelsea. That was great. I really liked the chat with Gemma Milne. Gemma always has important things to say, and that's true when I interviewed her in an earlier episode of this podcast, too. You can read more about Chelsea and sample some of her other journalism in this year's edition of STS Alchemy. That's the department's annual magazine. Links to Alchemy are in the show notes. And remember, Chelsea's podcast is one of five we're releasing over the winter break. Keep a watch out for more. Also, in the show notes, you'll find links to the data from Chelsea's research. She talks about 18 different programs, and you can see her results in detail. If you're a UCL student and want to be part of the STS Newsroom, stay alert for news about this summer's program. We'll have information sometime in the middle of term two. If you're an STS student and you just can't wait, think about volunteering to help out on the podcast. Have a look at the information on our website and then just get in touch. Lots of options are available. We Are STS is a production of the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. If you're a teacher and you're keen to introduce students to our degrees, please just drop us a line. We're always happy to talk. We've two main undergraduate degrees here at UCL, with other options too. These degrees are unique in the UK. They're highly regarded by our peers, and they're filled to the brim with experience and ambition. Music today included a bunch of pieces. Intro and outro music was Rolling at Five by Kevin MacLeod. That lovely interval piece was called Silly Intro, and it was by Alexander Nakarada. Both can be found on the fabulous website, filmmusic.io. And here's Chelsea to tell you about the music she used. Take it away, Chelsea.
Introductory and end music, A Happy Smile on Your Face by Music L Files. Suspense sound effect called Under Investigation by Iconics Music Production and Composition. Clock sound effect called Grandfather Clock Ticks by Videvo. Applause number one sound effect by SoundJay.com.
Thanks, Chelsea. Finally, you can find out more about the show, tell us what you think, and listen to past episodes just by visiting our website. Here's the address, so write it down. It's ucl.ac.uk/sts/podcast. Well, that's it for today, everybody. Thanks again to Chelsea. Thanks also to you for coming along. Till next time, folks, I'm Professor Joe Kane. And remember, working together to do good in the world, we are STS. Bye now. You've been listening to We Are STS, a podcast from the Department of Science and Technology Studies at University College London. Subscribe to the show and join us online. The address, ucl.ac.uk/sts/podcast.